Troopers were placing metal panels scavenged from the marooned tractor's flooring from the roof of one cab to the tail of the next tractor, forming a bridge across which they could march to the front of the column of stalled vehicles. From the leading tractor, they slid more panels across the treacherous blue slime to where the dusty gray regolith lay bare and safe. "Exactly," Giap heard Foray's reply. Taking in a deep breath and then releasing it slowly to calm himself, Giap said, "There is no need to call on the suicide volunteers as yet. I am extricating most of my troops from the pass. We will march down into the crater floor on foot." Foray's image was a red-faced thundercloud with a quivering mustache. Before the Secretary General could speak again, Giap went on, "We will meet our secondary force on the crater floor and march on Moonbase. Our numbers will be diminished by less than 5%. There, he thought. Let the pompous little politician chew on that for 3 seconds. I am the military commander here. I will counter the enemy's moves. It was I who insisted on splitting the force. Only a fool of a politician would send his entire force through a single mountain pass that could be guarded or blocked by the enemy so easily." When Foray's response came, it was a little more restrained, but only a little. "And your equipment? Your missile launchers and other heavy weapons? Your men carry them on their backs, I presume?" "No," Giap said, bristling at Foray's sarcasm. "We will not need them. If the rebels do not open their airlocks to us, we have enough firepower to blast them apart." 3 seconds later, Foray asked, "Without the heavy missiles?" "We have the shoulder-launched anti-tank rockets. They will knock down an airlock hatch, I assure you." The Secretary General seemed to fidget unhappily in his chair. He fiddled with his mustache, smoothed his slicked-back hair, adjusted the collar of his shirt. Giap sat motionless atop the tractor cab, waiting. "Well," Foray said at last, "perhaps you can carry it off after all." "I hope so, for your sake." Giap restrained a bitter reply. Foray went on, "Remember the volunteers. If all else fails, use them. Moonbase must not survive this day."
"They're assembling on the crater floor," Ginny Anson stated the obvious.
Anson, Gordet, O'Malley, and several others were clustered around Doug's console now, watching the screens over his shoulders. Command Central, Doug thought. Wherever I am is the nerve center. He punched up the imagery that Edith was sending out to Global News and saw the same view. A couple of dozen white peacekeeper vehicles inching across the floor of the crater, each of them piled high with peacekeeper troops who had marched down from Wojo Pass.
"The invaders are moving cautiously,"
Edith's voice was saying. She sounded tense, edgy, her voice raw and strained. She ought to take a break, Doug thought. But I can't spare anybody to relieve her. Then his eye caught the screen still showing the crowd in the cave. Maybe there's somebody there who could take over for her for a while. But Doug immediately put that thought aside. He didn't have time to go recruiting. And knowing Edith, she'd sooner burn her vocal cords out entirely than surrender this once-in-a-lifetime chance to narrate a battle on the moon. "They'll deploy around the main airlock," Gordet said. "Ought to be knocking on our door in less than an hour." Doug nodded. "Okay, we're ready for them, right?" Everyone nodded and murmured assent. Doug focused on O'Malley. His dust was going to be crucial. "Remember," Doug said, "all we have to do to win is survive. We don't have to kill any of the peacekeepers. We don't have to drive them off the moon. All we have to do is survive. Like the Confederacy in the American Civil War. They didn't have to conquer the North. All they had to do was prevent the North from conquering them." With a grunt, Gordet shot back, "which they failed to accomplish." The others stared at him. O'Malley looked downright hostile. Anson turned and walked away a few steps. Doug thought, Bam's not winning any popularity contests. But he admitted Gordet's point with a shrug. Moonbase against the United Nations, he thought. That's what it boils down to. Moonbase against the world. So far, so good, he told himself. We've still got our electricity, and we forced the peacekeepers to abandon their heavy weapons.
But as he watched the implacable approach of the peacekeeper troops, Doug realized that what had happened so far was just the preliminary phase of this battle. The real fighting was about to begin. Then the screen showing Edith's broadcast Earthside winked off. Crater Floor. Colonel Giap held the electro-optical binoculars to his visor and carefully studied the main airlock to Moonbase. The massive hatch had been slid wide open. The garage inside was brightly lit, clearly visible. They could be hiding behind the tractors parked in the garage, Giap reasoned, waiting to pick us off as we enter the garage. Pick us off with what? He asked himself. They have no guns. A few industrial lasers, of course, but those make awkward weapons. Trained troops could silence them in a few minutes.
The men are deployed and waiting for your orders, sir, said his sergeant.
Not his original aide. That poor devil was still back at the mountain pass, freed at last from the blue slime, but in no emotional condition to be relied upon. Men and women, sergeant, Giap reminded him. It is better to use the word troops.
Yes, sir,
the sergeant's apologetic voice hissed in Giap's helmet earphones. The troops are waiting for your orders, sir. Giap's timetable was a shambles, but that no longer mattered. They were about to penetrate Moonbase's perimeter defense. Putting down his binoculars and letting them dangle from the cord around his neck ring, Giap turned to face his team of officers. Three captains, six lieutenants. His second-in-command, a South African major, had been left with the stalled vehicles up in the mountain pass.
We have too many officers anyway, Giap thought. The peacekeepers are top-heavy with brass.
His nine officers straightened to a semblance of attention, a posture difficult to accomplish in their spacesuits and virtually impossible to maintain.
Stand easy, Giap said mildly. We will attack in two waves. First platoon will advance through the airlock and into the garage area on tractors. Second platoon will follow on foot. Third platoon will remain in reserve. Any questions?
A tenth figure had joined the little group uninvited.
What are we volunteers to do?
Giap turned on the questioner. In his spacesuit, it was difficult to determine which of the suicide fanatics it might be. The voice sounded American.
You are to return to the command tractor and remain there, all of you, until I summon you, Giap said firmly.
How will we know what to expect?
Giap allowed himself a sneering smile, knowing that no one could see it behind his tinted visor.
You can follow the progress of the battle on global news, just like everyone else on Earth.
Just at that moment his earphones buzzed, signaling an incoming message. Tapping the keypad on his wrist, Giap asked his replacement communication sergeant, "What is it?"
Report from the mountain climbing team, sir. They have reached the summit and cut the power lines to all the antennas up there. Moonbase has been silenced.
For the first time in hours, Giap smiled with genuine pleasure.
Good, he said. Send them my congratulations and tell them to report back to me on the crater floor as soon as they can.
Yes, sir.
Nodding inside his helmet, Giap told himself that Moonbase was now entirely cut off from the Earth. At last. The president looked bleary-eyed as she sipped at her first cup of coffee of the morning and stared at the muted wall screen that showed Global News' coverage of the Moonbase battle.
You're up early, said her chief of staff, taking his customary place in the Kennedy rocker.
So are you,
said the president.
I haven't been to sleep all night, he said, running a hand over his bald pate.
From behind her desk, the president could see that he was perspiring.
It'll all be over in a few hours, she said, gesturing toward the wall screen with the hand that held her coffee mug.
No, it won't, said the staff chief gloomily.
What's that supposed to mean?
Luce, we've got a shitstorm of public opinion coming down on us. I spent the whole damned night trying to calm down committee chairmen, media reporters, umpteen different governors and state party officials. Even some goddamn church leaders are yelling that we ought to pressure the UN into letting Moonbase go.
The president knew that her loyal assistant never used profanity in her presence unless he was truly upset or trying to make a crucial point.
but she shook her head.